Another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to learn more about Hope, you can at investinghope.com. You can listen to this show, of course, live at Joy 620, but you can also listen to the archive, the podcast, over on our website, investinghope.com. You can also find it on iTunes, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found, the TuneIn app as well. And so we would encourage you to do that. We appreciate you listening. And of course, if you want to volunteer, if you want to donate, if you want to help us out at Hope Resource Center, you can do all of that at investinghope.com. We have a lot to talk about today. There was a lot that occurred over the weekend concerning life and kind of our culture and our society. And we saw a lot of things bubble to the surface, and that continues to bubble to the surface. And so today we're not going to talk as much about the abortion life issue per se, but we are certainly going to talk about the life issue, our current culture, our current society, where we are, the narrative, the environment, the vitriol, the rhetoric that we're hearing from a lot of different areas. And I just think we need to have a heart-to-heart. Not that I'm going to be able to provide that for you any better than some other folks, but I do think it's important as we look at the current environment that we find ourselves in. And when I say environment, I don't mean the actual climate. I'm talking about the rhetoric that you currently see on cable news, that you currently see on social media. I was thinking over the weekend after the two shootings occurred, and if you're not familiar with what's happening, maybe you're listening to this show at a later date, maybe you haven't really paid much attention to what's going on in the news over the past weekend, but we had two shootings. We've had multiple shootings over the last few weeks, but this weekend we had two within about 24 hours apart, one happening in El Paso in a Walmart that occurred at like 10:30 a.m., and 22 people were killed there. It appears as if, of course, facts are still coming out. It appears as if that shooter, who is still alive and was taken into custody, it appears he actually walked into the Walmart first, went looking for those that he deemed to be Hispanic, and saw that there was enough people in there, went back out to his vehicle, grabbed his gun, put on his earmuffs, and then walked back into the Walmart and just shot a bunch of people and really was targeting those that he deemed to be Hispanic. And so he killed 22, and then finally officers arrived and they arrested him. I think his plan was to go out suicide by cop or even take his own life, but as we know, a lot of these folks are cowards, and he did not do that, and so he's been arrested. And he said, my point was to target Hispanics. And then at about 1:30 a.m., like I said, not about 24 hours later, in Dayton, Ohio, at a club. Actually, the guy didn't even get in the club. His goal was to get into the club, but officers responded really quickly. Officers were already in the area, but he still managed to get off 41 shots in 30 seconds, and he killed folks, injured folks, one of those being his sister. He actually killed his sister, and again, they're not sure about motive with him. He was then shot by police officers, and so you have multiple people dead, multiple people injured in both of those scenarios. And the interesting thing, I've been thinking through this in my head, and really as I saw this come out, I've been trying my best over the weekends to just kind of stay off of social media because it's not healthy for me, and we're supposed to know ourselves, and so if I know myself well, it's just not a good place for me to be over the weekend. And so over the weekend, I try to put it down, but you know, every now and then I'll pick it up, look. And so as I saw this information coming out, and then I start seeing on Facebook and Twitter, people posting their opinions and all these things. And here, let me just say this to you up front. And this is going to be hard for some of us to hear, but it's something that we all need to hear. Okay? If you hear of a shooting, a mass shooting, a lot of people lose their lives. And if your first thought, if your first reaction when you hear of a mass shooting, if your first thought is, you better not come take my guns, or your first thought is, we better go get all their guns, then we have a bigger issue. That's an idolatry issue. That's a heart issue. If at no point did you go, wow, there's parents that are burying their children this week because of what happened in El Paso, because of what happened in Dayton. In El Paso, a woman protected her 2-year-old, and she grabbed him so tight that it actually broke bones in his body, and she lost her life. And her husband lost his life as well. So there's 3 or 4 kids without parents because a crazy person walked into a Walmart. In Dayton, Ohio, you have a family that's going to have to bury their daughter this week that was murdered by her brother that also shot other people, and then he lost his life. So they're dealing with the loss of 2 children, one being a crazy shooter, one being a daughter that just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. But if you go on cable news and you go on social media, it's as if they're not even real people. It's as if the only thing that matters is our politics at that moment. I think back to 9/11. I was 17 years old when the planes hit the buildings in New York. That night in my small town of Cornersville, Tennessee, we went home. I lived with my brother at the time. We sat on the couch and we watched the news constantly. What's going on in the country? What's going on in the world? What's the president going to say? What's Congress saying? What's going on? Are we going to have another attack? We watched all of that, scared out of our minds. Even in a small town, knowing, look, Cornersville's not on the list for terrorists. But we were scared. Because why? Because these were Americans that were attacked. And what did you see? Small town where I'm from, churches opened up so people could go pray. You saw people come together. You watched the Yankees game, and President Bush stands and throws out the first pitch days later. And he's getting a standing ovation from Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, from Christians, atheists, Muslims. It didn't matter. We came together and we mourned because citizens of this country, because image bearers, were attacked. And I'm not sure what's happened. I have some guesses at what's happened since 2001 and 2019. But it appears to me that now, you see, Facebook wasn't around when 9/11 occurred. Twitter wasn't around when 9/11 occurred. Cable news was around, but it wasn't like it was like it is today, just yet. And so now, our first thought isn't fellow citizens have been attacked. Our first thought isn't, even as churchgoers, as gospel people, our first thought isn't image bearers are attacked. Parents are burying their children. Our first thought is, we're going to come get your guns, or you better not come get my guns. Shame on us. We have reached a level of rhetoric in our country and in our society that we may not be able to come back from. Like the anger. Used to, you would see people say, hey, let's wait and let the politics take care of itself in a few days, but let's mourn with these families. Now, if you even put a message out there, I'm praying for these families, what do you get? You get, we've had enough prayers and thoughts. Why don't you do something? As if praying is doing nothing. And look, I say this from a place where I get it. You can go back to my Facebook page from 5, 6, 7 years ago. I was a hateful, angry, bitter person. Why? Because I got that that jolt of adrenaline when I would post a snarky comment about politics, when I felt like I was dunking on somebody because they were wrong and I'm right. But I'm here to tell you, that's idolatry. And that jolt of adrenaline is fleeting. And it leaves you disconnected. It leaves you lost. And it leaves you with no real answers, no real hope for the future. But what it does is it turns your neighbors into political pawns. It turns your neighbors into people that need to be eradicated from your life. And Christian, I'm telling you, if you're listening to this and you find yourself being tugged into that world, that's anti-gospel. Do we need policies to fix some of these things? Certainly. And anyone that says otherwise is wrong. But what we also need to recognize is we're so quick to point fingers. When we've allowed politicians to campaign off of all of this anger for far too long on both sides of the aisle. So now what we're finding is the media saying that the guy in El Paso is a far right winger, white supremacist, which it appears that he is. He wrote a manifesto and we're still they're still trying to gather a lot of information on that. And it appears that the guy in Dayton, Ohio was a far left leaner that was actually just days ago tweeting about gun control. And so it isn't as if one side has the answer. And frankly, I'm waiting to see answers from anyone in Washington. But what did we see over the weekend? We saw presidential candidates. We saw people running for Congress. We saw people running for Senate immediately crafting emails to fundraise off the backs of dead people. And they don't think twice about it. And so my recommendation, and we're going to get into more of this as the show goes on, my recommendation would be for some of us, we need to log off of Facebook. For some of us, we need to log off of Twitter. For some of us, we need to look a neighbor in the eye and say hello. And what you'll find is that when you look a neighbor in the eye, a fellow image bearer in the eye, and say hello, you'll get another sense of that jolt of adrenaline because you're talking to a human being face to face. And then we'll start caring about each other. And then we'll deal with the issues within our community, the mental health issues that are driving people to feel so distant and so disengaged from society that they can walk into a Walmart, that they can walk to a club, and they can just start pulling the trigger and taking out anybody that's in their way. This is a culture issue. We'll talk more when we come back. Strongholds are still being moved. God, we believe. Yes, we can see. Wonders are still what you do. And bodies are still being raised. Giants are still being slain. 'Cause God, we believe. Yes, we can see. Wonders are still what you do. So as we continue the conversation and look to our current society and culture and where we are as far as the current, and you know, used to I would say the current political climate, it's hard for me at the moment to even distinguish between a culture climate and a political climate and just the narrative in general. And so we find ourselves with even our media corporations starting to pick sides. And so has media always been somewhat slanted? Sure. I'm currently listening to an audio book about Theodore Roosevelt and William Taft. And I know I'm a grandpa, but I'm listening to that and it's 34 hours long. And so I'm in the middle of it. And even back in the 1800s, you had Theodore Roosevelt that understood the importance of reaching out to the media. And so because of that, because he was kind of an open book to the media, they liked him. Well, then when Roosevelt left and Taft came in, Taft was not like that. He did not want to be open to the media, and so they didn't like him. And so some of the articles were a little bit different when it came to him. And so we've always had somewhat of a slant, but now what we find ourselves is, and I'm cool. Like look, we have a freedom of speech and freedom of press, and I am completely fine with someone getting on the camera and being like, look, I'm as conservative as they come, and that's where my that's how I see all of these issues, or I'm as liberal as they come, and that's how I see all these issues. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is when people get on the camera and they say, look, I am objective. I am a journalist, and I am above partisan political attacks. And then they get on the camera, and it is clear they are not. And you can just watch the way they're reporting on what we've seen over the last few days. And somebody said to me the other day, you know, all heck's breaking loose and what's going on. And I remember thinking, like, if you're watching Twitter, if you're watching some of the parts of Facebook, and you're watching cable news, then you would believe that there's actually war in the streets. And on that particular day, I went to Chick-fil-A, or I went to one of my lunch spots, and guess what? There wasn't war on the streets. You see, if you're watching those things, and that is what's fueling you, and that is what your answer is to everything, well, I got to post about this, or I got to post about that, or I can't wait to give my hot take on that issue, or if you see some comment on Facebook or some post on Facebook that you disagree with, and you can't wait to get into those comments and just get into back and forth, look, I'm telling you from firsthand, from my own perspective, I used to do that. It is a dangerous, dangerous, bitter place to be. Do not let that be who you are. And I know it's difficult. And I know that you get on social media and you see a lot of things posted and you're like, that is the dumbest take I've ever heard in my life, and I need to respond immediately, and I need to let them know just how dumb they are. And all I'm telling you is, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. And I know that's difficult, but I think back to what happened at 9/11. And if we'd have had Facebook back at 9/11, Lord help us, what would have happened? What would have happened? I mean, we got politicians right now today, because they're so angry and they're so politically driven, that they're tweeting out actual names and businesses and where people live that donated to the current president in the White House. Now, why would they do that? Because they want to throw fuel on the fire. And because it makes them look like they care. And they want to campaign on that. And it's a dangerous place to be, because our egos are fueled by it. So when we make that hot take and somebody comes in and says, you are so right, you are so right, let's get them, well, then that fuels us to go further. And in reality, when it comes to the political issues of all of these things, the policies of all of these issues, policies are boring. Policies are not to be made in high intense situations, like right after a mass shooting. And I know that makes some people uncomfortable. And they go, well, if not now, then when? Well, I would just say, emotions are high. We probably shouldn't be going and making policies that's going to affect the entire country. How about we actually, I don't know, sit down and have a conversation? Not a town hall. Not a town hall that's crafted and designed to throw more fuel on the fire, that's crafted and designed to continue to separate and divide this country, but a town hall that says, look, here's why I believe this, and then here's why I believe this. Let's talk to each other. I saw one of the kids that went to Parkland and was at the school when the shooting happened in Parkland, what was that, a year and a half, 2 years ago? And he tweeted out and he said, hey, if your first reaction is to reach out to a Parkland kid after a shooting, just please stop. I'm not answering your phone. That's where we are. We have kids that their lives were changed forever because of a shooting at a school in Florida. And the media got their number then, and now they have their number. And so anytime a mass shooting happens, they reach out to kids that had their whole lives changed. Kids that are just 19 years old. To get them on camera to push the narrative that they're seeking to push. They don't care about those kids. They don't care about their lives, their families. There's psychological issues that they may have because of they were at Parkland. And what this may do to them. No, it's about getting that story, getting that headline, getting those clicks. So as gospel people, what do we do with this? As gospel people, we get angry about these issues. As gospel people, we certainly have political views. As gospel people, we care about what's going on in our communities. But what do? How do we respond? And not just how do we respond when these terrible things happen. And look, folks, they're not going to stop. That's not fear-mongering. That's just the truth. They're not going to stop. You know, over the weekend, it's the bloodiest weekend Chicago's seen all year. You hearing about that on the news? A friend of mine, her mom has cancer. And they may stop treatment. She may be gone in a few days. So it isn't just that these things are occurring. Look, we are in a post-Genesis 3 world. So for the Christian, when these things happen, I know some of us want to go, how, why? But if we believe the Bible to be true, then when sin entered this world, it broke everything. Everything. On my drive over to the studio today, I was listening to a new song by Luke Combs. I'm a big country fan. And it broke me. Because that's where we are. We are in a broken culture. That particular song is about a dad and a son relationship. And it goes from when the son was a boy to being scared in his room. And he's saying, Dad, please don't go. And the dad says, well, even when I'm not here, I'm with you. And then it goes all the way to when the dad is on his deathbed. And the son is saying, please don't go. I need you here. And the dad's saying, even if I go now, I'm going to be with you. Now, there's some theological issues I have with that. But the point is, like, we know that day is coming. And so are we operating, in a sense, from a biblical worldview? Or have we allowed our politics, have we allowed our opinions, have we allowed social media and cable news to muddy the water so much that we really don't know where our patriotism ends and our Christianity begins? Where our love for the Constitution ends and our Christianity begins? So when we're saying the society and culture needs to do some soul searching, I would simply say to gospel people, we need to do our own soul searching. Are we loving our neighbor? Are we being engaged and being a part of our community, trying to make it a better place? Are we seeing mental illness around us and addressing it in loving ways? Or are we waiting for that terrible thing to happen so that we can jump, so that we can comment, so that we can add fuel to the fire and divide even more? We'll be back. Yeah. I'm telling y'all, that song is, I mean, it had me, there's multiple times when I'm driving, this is how much I love country music. There's, even in when the theology's bad, I get it. You're listening to this, you're going, that is not theological, that is not what the Bible says. Yeah, I know it isn't. But there's so many country songs that I listen to, and I turn into this little girl crying. And so when I'm listening to that song by Luke Combs, it just gets me. It rocked me on the way over. I was walking in sniffling, and I thought, I got to get myself together before I go on air. So, yeah, go listen to that song. Even though I'm leaving, Luke Combs, good stuff. Strongly encourage it. I know I probably shouldn't be encouraging Luke Combs' song on Joy 620, but, yeah, I just did. So it's good stuff. Before we get back in, I do want to say that look, we have I didn't want today's show to turn into, like, me lecturing or anything like that, but I do believe, look, I know what happens if you allow yourself to go down this path. I know. It might make you feel a little good in the moment to dunk on somebody and to feel like you got the right answer, but ultimately that's not going to fix stuff. And so what happens is we start to see these things as issues that don't affect real people, but they do affect real people. It's the same thing with abortion. Look, I am adamantly opposed to abortion, but for many people, they see the abortion life issue as issues. But because of the work that we do at Hope Resource Center, like, we see it as what it is. That there are people in this community that believe their only option is abortion. Now, we disagree with that. But that's what they believe. Because that's what they've been told. And because they're scared. And so how are we going to reach them? Am I going to reach them by sitting down with them in that critical time and critical moment and saying, look, here's why you should be pro-life. Here's why you should vote for conservatives. Here's why the Supreme Court needs to be the way it is. Here's what that, no, I'm not going to reach them doing that. You know how I'm going to reach them? By actually caring about them. By sitting down with them and saying, tell me about what's going on. Let's talk about your fears. Let's talk about your anxieties. Maybe even share our own story with them. You see, a lot of times in these situations, what we want is, what we say, we want leadership. We want leadership. And for a lot of folks, leadership means hardcore, aggressive leadership that's just going to hammer down and get things done. Sometimes you need that. Sometimes it has to be a quick decision to move forward. Sometimes you don't. And I saw a message today from a pastor, and I loved what he said. He said, I often hear aspiring pastors ask, and I think you could even look at pastors and say leaders, but he says, I often hear aspiring pastors ask what Paul means when he says an elder must be, quote, able to teach, as we see in 1 Timothy 3:2. I seldom hear them ask what Paul means when he says an elder must be, quote, gentle, as we see in 1 Timothy 3:3. And then he says, a question for all of us, do I aspire to gentleness like I aspire to teach? Now that text is specifically talking about elders, overseers, pastors, preachers within the church. But I would argue that oftentimes we equate leadership to loud and bold and aggressive. Look, what he's talking about and what Paul is talking about in 1 Timothy, he's not calling for weak people. He's not calling for weak-kneed men, weak-kneed women that are just going to go out there and be super passive and not do anything. He's not calling for that. But there is a difference in being the leader that we've been called to be as a Christian that is bold and stands up strong but also is gentle. And then a leader that is bold and stands up strong but is an absolute jerk. And so as we're having these conversations, as we're walking through this about what's going on in our country and what's going on around the world, we have to at some point be willing to not be jerks. Like, do we understand that? Especially for the church. Like, are we okay not being a jerk, even if we disagree with somebody? Are we okay with allowing ourselves to be gentle? Not watering down the gospel, not watering down the truth, but still being gentle in those moments? And my fear is that we've reached a point where no one wants to be gentle. Certainly not on social media. Certainly not on cable news. If you've been paying attention to cable news over the last 5 or 6 years, you have seen an influx of millennials, my generation, getting in front of the camera, especially on the conservative side of the aisle. So you've seen these young, attractive, articulate people getting in front of the camera and being able to spat off whatever they want to spat off. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Sometimes they're super smart and they're a prodigy, like, say, a Ben Shapiro. Sometimes they're not so much. But why are they getting that moment? It's because many of them refuse to be gentle. And that's what sells right now on cable news. That's what gets the clicks, because that's why Facebook is successful. There's been studies that have shown that what Facebook does in their algorithm is try their best, because they know you so well. They try to populate your feed with things that get you riled up. Do you ever feel like, man, I'm not seeing the articles that I would agree with? I'm seeing some of the stuff from the other side, or I'm seeing things that'll get me riled up, because the algorithm is designed for that. Because what they know is you're going to engage more on the site if your blood pressure is up. Pay attention to that. Same thing on Twitter. Cable news is doing the same thing too. They know you well. And so they're going to say things that they know will give them that they understand right now. Cable news understands, look, there's a lot of people not sitting down for an hour and watching our show. But what we do know is YouTube is awesome, and pulling clips of our show is awesome. So what they're trying to do throughout their hour-long show is get that one moment that'll be shared on Twitter, that one moment that'll be shared on Facebook, that one moment that'll be shared on YouTube. Even if the most of the engagement is from people that disagree with them. Because why? They go viral, and then they got all the information they need. And they get the clicks they need. They'll get the advertisers they need. And so we're in a current state where everyone wants to, I think the new word on Twitter is to cancel everybody else. And so you get into this situation where you disagree with them, so you want to cancel them. You want to get their show off the air. You want to get them ran out of D.C. You want to get them ran out of Hollywood, all of these things. Why? Because we're allowing ourselves to be controlled, and we're allowing fuel to be thrown on the fire. Instead of getting up in the morning and walking into our communities, walking into our workplaces, and walking and just saying, look, I want to be engaged in our community. That's how we fix these issues. And so when Scripture says, when Jesus says, love your neighbor, like, that wasn't a throwaway line. When he's asked what's the greatest commandment, and he has an opportunity to give a full dissertation on the Ten Commandments, and he says, love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Now why would he do that? Because if you love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and then you love your neighbor as you love yourself, guess what? You're not going to cheat on your spouse. You're not going to lust after your neighbor's spouse. You're not going to want to murder your neighbor. You're not going to want to steal from your neighbor. No, you're going to want to do things that would honor the God that you're loving with your heart, soul, and mind. You're going to do things that would honor yourself even, because you're going to love others as you love yourself, and you wouldn't want to do those things to yourself. So he gave a quick synopsis of, look, this is what you need to do. And the truth of the matter is that apart from Christ, we can't do any of those things. And so how are we able to love our God with all our heart, soul, and mind? We are able to do that because Christ went to the cross, because he rose 3 days later. How could we possibly love our neighbor as ourselves? How could we possibly forgive the man that walked into that Walmart and shot those people and killed 22? How could we possibly find it in ourselves to forgive him? Because Christ forgave us, that's how. That doesn't mean he doesn't get punished. That doesn't mean there's not law that has to be that we have to abide by. But what it means is when we look at this world and we say, man, we can't wait for Jesus to come in and turn everything upside down. Guess what, folks? In Genesis 3, everything was turned upside down. What Jesus does from his life and his death on the cross and his resurrection 3 days later, it starts the process that will ultimately be finished when he comes back at turning the world right side up. That's what we long for. Because until that day, babies will have their lives taken in the womb. Until that day, crazy people may just walk in to a Walmart and shoot others. And so we understand that living in the post-Genesis 3 world, we have a lot of brokenness. And we long for the day that Jesus may come back. But until that day, we have work to do in our communities. We have work to do in our churches. We have work to do when it comes to loving our neighbors. So the question is, are we a gospel people or not? If we are, let's get out there and show it. Not with just our actions, but with our words. We'll be back. And as you speak, a hundred billion galaxies are born in the vapor of your breath. The planets form. If the stars are made to worship so loud, I can see your heart in it. Every burning star, signal fire, grace. If creation sings your praises, so will I. That's the latest from Luke Combs. I don't know if you've heard that one. Kidding. He probably could sing the crap out of that song, though, for sure. But I don't know if you'll hear a country version of So Will I anytime soon, but that's a good one, too. Probably a little bit more theological sound than the Luke Combs bumper a while ago, but hey, you're getting it from all directions today here on Joy 620. So as we finish up the conversation, I do want to say that as we step out and boldly proclaim the gospel, be gentle people, be loving people. I think sometimes, especially in our current society, we equate gentleness with weakness, and I would simply say that's not true. That is not true. If that is how you see being gentle, then you have a distorted view of gentleness. Our Jesus was gentle. When the woman rushed in while Jesus was dining with the Pharisees and she washed his feet with her hair, and the Pharisees are all waiting to see what Jesus, the rabbi, the teacher, what is he going to do? And Jesus simply looked around and said, do you see this woman? She's doing what she should do. He showed gentleness. When he walked up to the woman at the well, he didn't water down the truth. He said, you've had five husbands, and the man currently in your bed is not your husband. But when everyone else wouldn't walk up to her, Jesus showed gentleness by walking up to her. When Jesus flipped over the tables at the temple, he was being bold in doing that. But he was making a larger point that you will not do this. You will not defile this area. You see, our Jesus had all the attributes. But to equate gentleness with weakness is distorted. That is not true. That may be what society says and how they define gentleness. But that's not how Scripture defines it. And so may we be a people that when these situations occur, or when things are just running smooth, are we Are we known as a gentle people? Is our church known as the gospel spreading, Jesus glorifying, gentle church? Again, not watering down the truth. We certainly call sin sin. We certainly say that there's only one way to salvation. We say that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light. We say all of those things. But look, if you say all of those things and then you package it by being a jerk, then don't be surprised when at times it falls on deaf ears. And so if I could challenge you to do anything, it would be, as society says, we've heard enough of your prayers and thoughts, I would say, pray for the families in Texas. Pray for the families in Ohio. And look, when you're praying for the families, I know this makes some people uncomfortable. I'm not just meaning the ones that were shot. But I'm also meaning the families of the person that did the shooting. Our gospel compels us. Our Jesus compels us to care about the image bearer. That no one is too far out of reach. And so my prayer for the shooter in El Paso is that he would repent of his ways and that the Lord would grab a hold of him. Again, that doesn't water down what punishment he may face here in this country. And so as you're praying for these families, also, if I could challenge you to just put your phone down for just a second and look up and make eye contact with a neighbor, make eye contact with somebody, and simply say hello. We are reaching a place where we are finding community inside of our phones and on our computers. And folks, that isn't community. It concerns me when people tell me how many friends they have on Facebook. Those aren't friends. Those are people you know. Some of them may be real life friends in person. Many of them are not. And so interact with community. And if you're sitting here listening saying, I don't have community, are you a part of a local church? That is where community occurs. So get a part of a local church. It's important that we do that. And pray for this country. Pray for our leaders that they would step out, not to gain political cred, not to raise money off the backs of those that lost their lives, but to really step out and take serious what they've been tasked to do. And may we start with our own communities and loving our neighbors well and being there for those that are broken and in need. We are grateful for your partnership at Hope Resource Center, and we'll talk to you next week.